Welcome, everybody, to the official Leeds United podcast. I'm Michael Bridges, and I'm joined, as always, with Matt Lewis. And I'm excited about this podcast because it's a fellow striker, a goal-scoring machine at Leeds United. Never since he's arrived, he's been absolutely superb. He scored in the 2-1 victory in our last match against Plymouth, and I can't wait to get tucked into some of the questions we're going to ask him about his training, how he's enjoying Leeds United, and what he's like off the field.
Without further ado, we are going to welcome to the podcast for the first time, and hopefully not the last time, it's the best striker in the Championship. It is Leeds United's new number 7. And I'm not going to say his name, because the most important question that everyone wants to know from this man, it's the one that's on everyone's lips right now, is how do we pronounce your name properly?
In Dutch, we always say Joël Pirou.
Joël
Pirou.
Pirou.
So not Pirou.
No, not Pirou.
Pirou.
Yes.
Okay. Joël right. Pirou. There we go. So please welcome the best striker in the Championship, Joël Pirou.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
How are you, mate?
Yes, I'm good. How are you guys?
We're very well.
We're always good. Me and Matt get very excited for this point of the week because we know we're going to have a chat with some of the players and totally go anywhere we can with this, but it's about getting to know you. And I'm just delighted that Matt asked that question because I've been doing the commentary with Tony Drago and I've got a apologise because I have been pronouncing your name wrong. So now, from this day forward, I'm going to get it right. There you go. And sound proper Dutch.
It makes me so embarrassed when we get players on here. And obviously, you're from the Netherlands and your English is impeccable. And I wouldn't even know where to begin with Dutch. I've spoken to a few Dutch people in my time and their English is always incredible. Like, why is that? Why is it that your English is so, so good?
Yeah, well, they spend a lot of time on education, really. We are trained in English really well. And I think even if you look in Amsterdam, I think there are more people speaking English than Dutch.
Wow.
What he's basically saying is that we need to have a trip over Amsterdam again, Matt. There you go. That's an invite. Yeah, that's exactly what he's saying.
Ah, thanks, mate.
Joël can show us around over there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
Now, from one Amsterdam to find yourself at Leeds United, obviously in Leeds, how you find that? How are you settled in?
Well, really well. I think it's a really nice area with nice people. And of course, the people here that helped me settle down really helped a lot.
Did you know any of the players before you got here, or are you basically just getting to know everybody since you've arrived, or just from playing against them?
Of course, I knew a couple of players, especially the Dutch guys, Cree, Pascal. I knew them from the youth already. And then, of course, I knew some of the names that you've seen playing before, but it's really getting to know the other guys as well. And well, I have to say, I really love the guys. They're really nice, really helpful, really open, really friendly. So nothing but positives.
Oh, that's really great to hear. I'm glad you're enjoying your time. We'll come back to talk about the Leeds players in a bit, because you can maybe we can dig some dirt on them in a bit. But before we get onto that, I think the people would really love to just learn about you, really, about, you know, how you got into football and how we got to where we are today. I mean, I was reading earlier, is it right that when you first started, you actually played at left back and in left in midfield rather than a striker? Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So what shifted there?
I always scored loads of goals, even playing as a defender or midfielder. So at one point, one of the coaches just said, you know what, let's try him out as a striker. And that sticked.
And the rest is history.
And how old were you then?
I would say 12.
Oh, wow. So you knew from an early age.
Was that in the Dutch system? What club was that with?
That was at NEC at the time.
Yeah, because I found it fascinating just having a look and a bit of research. Obviously, the academies, I was in a similar situation to yourself when I had a look at the academies, because I'd gone from being as a Newcastle Academy lad as a youngster, and then I went to Sunderland, and then I ended up, tried Middlesbrough, and it was third time lucky for me when I found myself at Sunderland getting an apprenticeship. So just talk us through your development, how many clubs you were at as a youngster, just for the other kids out there, as you know, that are looking to try and emulate what me and you managed to do.
Well, of course, like at first it's very local, just from some amateur clubs hopping from one to the other, like who plays the highest division. And after that I went to NEC, played there a couple of seasons and then left to go play for Feyenoord.
Did they sign you there or did you leave?
Yes, they signed me there. Then I had some problems with school and there was some point where we couldn't agree on. And I left Feyenoord to go to PSV. And that's where I finished the academy life.
Not a bad transition.
No, it was a good transition.
Do you want to elaborate a little bit on the school thing? Were you a difficult student, let's say?
Well, I would say it's controversial because, of course, they have their side. I have my side. But let's say I didn't went to classes. I didn't make, I don't know how you say it, CSE?
Oh, yeah, okay, GCSE kind of things. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I didn't attend them, didn't make them, but I did get nice grades for it, even though not making it. Okay. And I said something about it and that I was not happy with it. And, well, stuff escalated and we ended up separating.
Wow.
I love it.
I'll tell you what we'll do. Like everybody does these days, we'll just blame VAR. All right, there you go. We'll just say that it was a controversial VAR decision at school. And one thing led to another and he went to Feyenoord. There you go.
I just love how you described it as almost like a business deal, like a transaction. You know, we chose to separate there.
Yeah.
And that was that.
Yeah, no, because like I wouldn't say I was like a bad kid or did silly stuff at school.
Right.
Well, maybe skipping classes, that's my part of the deal that was wrong, but
but you were skipping it to go and play football and,
exactly.
and get better at what is now your career.
Yes, of course, and well, that's actually true.
Right.
Yeah, I've got to say, Matt, my parents used to hate coming to parent teachers evenings when they come to see my teachers because everyone they saw from the age of 10 up until 16 said Michael needs to concentrate more in class. All he does is looks out of the classroom window because every class I used to get to, I wanted to be closer to the football field so I could just look out there and dream. And I daydreamed and did no work. And my dad and mom used to go mental because that's all I wanted to do. Do you know what I mean? I was so distracted from studying. So we've got something in common, man.
Do you know, I think I skipped class twice in my entire school career. And they were both actually to play football as well. But unfortunately, I never became a professional like you, so I just got in trouble for it.
You didn't do too bad though, Matt.
Well, but you two forged a career, which is amazing. You say you went to Eindhoven then, and then where'd you go from there?
From there, I finished academy there, started joining the first team. Then they sent me out on loan for one season to Sparta, Rotterdam again. But then COVID struck and it got the season a little bit short. And then afterwards, right. I played a full season for the first team of PSV, where mostly I had my play time from as a substitute. Then they sold me for Swansea. And after two seasons, I got bought by Leeds.
What was it like at such a young age, playing for such a prestigious old club like PSV Eindhoven? I mean, that must have been pretty incredible.
Yeah, no, it's great. It was like 45 minutes from where I grown up. So it's pretty local as well. And like, yeah, you know, the big names who have played there before, competing in Champions League, Europa League, to be part of that was always nice. And like, it's always good to play for a championship.
So who was your you coming through the academy and obviously being with Feyenoord and PSV, who, and as Matt alluded to earlier, you've gone from a defender into a striker. So did you look up to anybody who was like your idols back then at them football clubs? Who was your mentors?
At Feyenoord, I had Roy Mackay as mentor. We had loads of training sessions together.
Great on Championship Manager as well.
Yeah.
He was as well.
And of course, at PSV, I worked together with Ruud van Nistelrooy.
Yeah. Wow.
We had Luke Nielis.
Very, very talented.
Yes.
I think he's just been, actually. I think it was Ruud van Nistelrooy and the Brazilian Ronaldo came out and said that he was their favourite strike partner, I do believe, if I was reading that correctly. They said he was absolutely incredible.
Yeah, that's good.
Because he had a nasty injury against Aston Villa, I believe. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. That's right, yes. But his technique was really good. And it still is really good, I have to say, despite the injuries. But yeah, no, we could learn a lot from him. Especially like what you see nowadays often is that everyone just thinks about speed or power, that they just want to shoot as hard as possible. But he's the one who always says like, no, shoot 30% less hard but more precise, then you will get the job done.
Right. We've already seen that with you a couple of times this season, haven't we?
You can actually see that in your performances and the way that you do actually finish your... it's a hard thing to actually teach and coach, like you were saying. When you get into certain situations, I always tell the strikers and that to just slow down and breathe and relax in certain situations so you can have that composure. Everybody seems to do things at 100 mile an hour. And obviously the upbringing and the mentoring that you've had from the advice of them players has paid absolute dividends, because it's a craft to scoring goals. And there's an art to it. Some people take it, think, you know, it happens so naturally for people. And I think you've been blessed with that because you've listened to the advice and you like you say, it's about passing the ball into the net, and it's almost like you're passing a firm pass to a player.
Yeah, definitely. And that's quite funny as well, because when I think about Roy Mackay, I used to love to try to dink a goalkeeper or do something silly. And he was the one, even if you scored, he would still scream at you and like, almost want to kill you, because he said, no, you just finish it. And that's the kind of person he is, really. Yeah, keep it simple and just score goals.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, you've been sort of, you've made a name for yourself at Swansea for outscoring your expected goals massively. I mean, is that what you attribute that to? Is just having a bit more composure and a bit more calmness to just, like you said, finish the job rather than do something silly?
Yeah, definitely. And I have to say as well, like the expected goals thing, I think it's very nice that it's put on the chart. But I sometimes feel like certain spots for certain players are like easier to score than other chances where you would say like, oh, that's much easier. So I think it's a little bit, well, for every player different. You know what I mean?
No, I do know what you mean, actually, completely. Yeah, it's not. It doesn't seem like an exact science.
Yeah, exactly.
Depending on who it is that's got the ball.
Yeah.
So then you moved to Swansea and you were like, what, like 20, 21 or something at Swansea?
Yes.
So what was that like, moving a different country?
At first, it was very exciting. Like, of course, coming here, you know, the league is going to be tougher and everything. And like, I knew Swansea was a team that the season before finished, I think, third or fourth. They lost the playoff final. So it was really exciting to see how good the squad was and like if we would go for a playoff push again. And of course, you know, Premier League is, well, the best league in the world. Then you just want to see like how far are we off, what's the difference with here and the Netherlands. And yeah, when I saw the group, the staff, everything, I thought like, all right, I made the right decision to come here. But then after 2 weeks, the gaffer left.
Right.
Who was the gaffer?
Steve Cooper. He was the one who brought me there.
Oh, right, yeah.
So a lot changed. And then again, I was thinking like, oh no, what's going to happen now? And of course, I still needed to prove myself to the team before that. But it was like, kind of a situation where there's a new gaffer coming. He's not the one who bought me, so I don't even know if he likes me as a player or what's going to happen now.
It's a horrible situation.
What's that like for both of you, really, when a new gaffer comes in?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm assuming, does he get you in his office? Does he sit you all down individually and talk to you about his plans for you and whatnot? Like, how does it work for you individually when someone new comes in?
Yeah, well, he took me in the office and we had a chat about it. Just as you said, he said in his mind, like with the team, how he knew it, like most of the players he knew before, like Matt Grimes or Jamie Patterson, Carl Norton, like he knew them. He knew how he would want to work with them, but he didn't know me. So he said in the first meeting we had, like, I don't really like your intensity and I want to bring in another striker. So I'm going to take number 9 off you. And you can have another number. And he said, it doesn't mean that I don't want to work with you. You can still show yourself to me. But this is how I think at the moment. And it's up to you to change my mind.
Wow.
This is how ruthless football is, Matt, right? And all you people listening, right? Joel just give you the honest you know, answer to what he's gone through. I experienced this at Hull City, all right? I'd signed from Carlisle United to Hull City. It was Phil Parkinson, who is now actually the Wrexham manager on the Wrexham documentary that you're seeing. And Parky signed as he lasted 6 matches and he got the sack. Now, I'd been at Bolton Wanderers previously with Sam Allardyce, who I absolutely loved. I really enjoyed Sammy's enthusiasm. And obviously, you know, we saw a spell of him when he was manager last season. And his sidekick was a guy called Phil Brown. Now, I didn't get on with Phil Brown at all at Bolton Wanderers. And guess who got announced as the new manager at Hull City? Phil Brown. And I had exactly the same story. He took us into the office and he literally said, "I didn't sign you, Michael. Phil did. I don't want you. We're going to have to see how this happens." And I turned around and said, "Well, listen, I've got a 2-year contract. You've only got one. So we'll see who's here longer." Anyway, I found myself off to Australia the following season. But it's incredible how one manager fancies you and the other one just, it's a ruthless industry. But obviously you knuckled down because you ended up scoring 41 goals for Swansea and you ended up being very prolific.
Yes, no, but that's the luck I had, I think, with the Gav Russell-Martin at that time, that he was open for change.
And hard work.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Yeah. Did he change the system and that you had to change yourself to fit into it? Or is it just a case of he just didn't know what you were capable of?
No, I would say he didn't know what I was capable of, because I think looking back at it, I fitted in the system that he wanted to play as well. And like, it worked out both ways.
And had you seen the system beforehand under Cooper when you made the move? Because this is what I'm going to allude to when you came to, obviously, when you signed for Leeds United. Did you see the way Swansea were playing before you signed and then you were thinking that would suit my style of play, or did you just go without even seeing any of their football?
No, I did watch some of their football. Like, of course, not that much, but I did my research as well. And like, I saw like in the years before that they actually played a lot with wingers and like more or less a little bit how Leeds want to play as well. And in there, he said to me as well that I would play as a striker or as a number 10 behind the striker, and like loads of working together, working with crosses, or like loads of chances that will be created there. And then, of course, they wanted me at the end of it.
I want to talk. I'm acutely aware that we don't have you for much longer, Joel. So I want to obviously get onto Leeds and Daniel Farker and you fitting into his system. But just real quickly, I just want to touch on the idea of a new boss coming in. I'm kind of fascinated by this idea. Everyone sort of assumes that footballers are like hyper confident and, you know, water off a duck's back. Nothing really bothers them. They just play football. But I imagine there's a massive degree of trepidation amongst you all when a new boss comes in, as there would be in any profession. You know, there's a lot of people listening to this show right now that have probably worked for a company that maybe have had a takeover, or maybe they've got a new executive or something, and they're all thinking, "Oh, are we going to lose our jobs here?" And I'm wondering, like, do you all talk to each other in a squad when you've got a new boss coming in? Do you all discuss and talk about like those worries, those fears that you have? Is it a thing that you share with each other, or is it quite a lonely thing that you have to just sort of deal with yourself?
No, it's something you share with each other, because you build up relationships, really, especially with the players. You're together every day of the week, more or less.
Right.
And like, let's say a boss comes in and you know he plays with 5 at the back and he doesn't love wingers. Well, all the wingers will speak to each other like, "Well, what's going to happen to us? Are we going to sit on the bench? Are we going to transform to a wing back? Or is he going to ship us off?"
Right.
Or you'll see them like this on the phone, straight to their agent, "Go and get me a move, because we know we're not going to play."
Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, it's not all sunshine and rainbows, is it? I mean, there is a lot of fear for your future that happens, particularly nowadays with the churn of managers these
days. That's why I was saying to you last season, Matt, when we obviously win the Premier League going through manager after manager, it was too much of a quick turnover, because the players, we've got to then learn a new system, a new style, build new relationships with the manager. And then all of a sudden that goes out the window. If you go back to the start, but you're learning new tactics, you've got a new manager that's got different interests. And it was just, you know, I thought it was a recipe for disaster
unsettling.
I've been in that. It is. And Joel, I'll tell you, I was in that situation when we were struggling at Leeds. We went through several managers and it's not nice. Yeah. Thankfully now, though, we've got a manager that is settled. Daniel Farker. So he's got the man in front of us. He's signed you. Tell us about how that conversation went when you got the move to the Mighty Whites and how you found working under Daniel and his system.
Beforehand, we had a good chat and he expressed to me that I could learn a lot here and even get my statistics up and play really for the promotion that we want to go for as well. And that was one thing I really, really wanted to go and do. So that was something that I didn't need much time to think about. I wanted the move as well, and I was really pleased with it. And since coming here, working with him, with the whole staff, it's been a pleasure till now, because it's very clear what they want from me. Like, the players are really good, and it's nice to fit in there and to find your own rhythm in it as well, because of course I'm not a winger who wants to dribble a lot or be flashy all the time, but try to be more clinical and bring the balance a little bit as well, settle games down to just win and don't worry too much about what we're doing on the pitch really as well.
That's interesting, because Daniel said it doesn't need to be champagne football. It doesn't need to be. 3 points is all that matters at the end of the day. Are you very much of that school of thought?
Yes, definitely. I was screaming the other day against Leicester a couple of times to the players as well, come on, let's keep the ball instead of going for a counter-attack every time, because we're in lead. We don't need to as much as them. And if we just keep the ball a little bit longer and let them chase, they will get more desperate as well. And that's when the game will become easy for us. But
wow,
young guys are always hungry as well. Yeah. I have to say, yeah, it's true.
The enthusiasm, the excitement, the occasion sometimes does get to them. Yeah, you talked about partnerships and relationships before with managers in the past. I've got to say, Jorginho Rutter was here last season, the Premier League, and obviously he came in. There was a huge price tag. We didn't see the best of him. It was a tricky situation. I've got to say, Joel, since you've come in, the partnership that you have bonded with him on the field, the way you've given him a new lease of life. So is it how have you gone about that on the training park, and how have you enjoyed playing alongside Rutter?
I've enjoyed it really, really much because, of course, he's a player. Like, if you see him play football, you can just enjoy that part already. And he is also very open to have a conversation. And I would say from day one, when I came here, it didn't really feel like competition, but more that we're here to help each other grow as well, and that we need to learn from each other and just work together the best we can. And I think he's been very open to it as well. And that's what I think that makes it easier to work together. We're not envious of each other or anything, but try to add everything to each other.
It really shows.
That's great to hear. Matt, there is one thing he can't be envious. He won't be envious of him for, and that's Rutter's dress sense. I'm going to mention it again.
Oh God,
he's the worst dressed man I've ever seen. By the way, Joel,
we're going to have to get him on to defend himself at some point, because you're hammering him every week. I want to hear you're laying into it.
Joel's laughing. He's agreeing. You know what I'm on about. Come on.
I know what you're on about, but I have to say it's a cultural thing. I would say French people, even Dutch people, I think our fashion sense is different to people from England.
Very different, I think, based on some of the things that Jorginho's been rocking up in.
I've seen you dressed outside, Joe. You seem to dress very well. There's been much talk about, obviously, you playing in that position behind Jorginho rather than up front. Obviously, the boss went into quite a lengthy dialogue about it in one of his press conferences, I'm sure you've heard. But it's working. We're getting the results. And I found it really interesting that what you just said there about that the head on your shoulders is much more pragmatic, that maybe you might be a bit of a calming force in the middle, which it goes a long way to explain it. But are you enjoying it? Do you enjoy playing that role, or would you rather be up front?
No, I definitely enjoy it. Of course, I know I can bring more. I haven't shown my full capacity yet, but I think that's something that needs a little bit of time as well, because of course, it's not only me that needs to know the players. The players need to get to know me a little bit more as well.
Yeah.
Like I wouldn't say we're fully working together yet as how it will be towards the end.
Which is frightening, actually, because it's already coming pretty good.
Yeah, that's true.
Put a smile on Matt's face here. He's a massive fan and he just lit up there thinking, you mean there's more to come from these two? What is going on?
Yeah, no, definitely. And the boss explained really well to me and Jorginho as well. And he tries to make us swap positions more often. And I think in the start, we have been a little bit too static about it. And I I would say that's maybe because we're both young and like not as experienced like to other players who would like feel it a little bit more, or would say, I don't listen as much to the boss as younger guys do, who hear him say one thing and more or less think about it a little bit too much.
All the time. Yeah.
Right.
And I feel like that's where we are now deciding more for ourselves as well, like when we swap, how long we swap for. And I think that's some things we can still improve even more, especially when you play against an opponent where you know it just works, that you don't change, you just keep on doing it. There will be much more to come.
I just see the freedom that you, when obviously Ruter's playing as the number nine and you're playing in behind, I call it the pockets of space in behind. It's a great position for you because I think you're a lot more balanced and you understand that role. But what I've seen and why I was saying the partnership has been working, if I see Ruter come off short at an angle and there's nobody as the focal point, straight away you're looking to either exploit the space that he leaves if the defender follows him, or you go and make it as the target man yourself. So I love the balance that you've got. And obviously with Daniel, the boss, not the gaffer, the boss, giving you that information, I can see it's paying dividends to you and Ruter. So that's good to watch.
I'm interested in, because I don't know if you're aware, Joel, but I am not an athlete. on the occasions I do play stuff, whether it's golf or darts or whatever, every now and then and it is very, very infrequent for me, but every now and then I'll step up to the ball in golf and I won't even feel anything. Like, I'm just so in the zone, I'm not thinking about the swing, and every single ball I'm hitting it beautifully. And the same with darts, once in a blue moon I don't have to I'm just hitting it every single time. Do you have games like that? Do footballers, professionals even have games like that? Because you just mentioned it there, sometimes when you and Ruta don't even think about it, you just do. Like, when you're in that zone, like, does that happen? And what does that feel like? I mean, when you two are just completely in sync.
Nah, yeah, of course it happens. And, well, at those moments, it feels like, I would say, like, you can't make mistakes. You see everything. Even if you haven't seen something, but you just guess that something is the way it is. And then everything just clicks and it feels so easy. And then it feels also like you don't have, if you have a game and you're playing medium or hard or easy, that you just put the level on easy where you can handle hard.
Basically, he's playing FIFA on easy when you're in that zone, you know what I mean? Everything goes right for you.
Yeah.
Do you know the other thing, Joe, with that? I used to find that I never had as many good games as you, by the way. Oh, all right. When I did have them games where nothing went wrong, you also find that you didn't need to get your second wind. I never felt out of energy because you just felt like everything was going right. And I got the energy levels from nowhere. I felt like the Superman at points, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And maybe sometimes even that you're getting a little bit overexcited, that towards the end, you will suddenly feel a little drop in your energy.
Too excited. This is one thing that I'm fascinated with, because you've said that you're a vocal, you don't mind being a vocal player on the park. Yeah, when you were saying about keeping the ball at Leicester, you know, giving a bit of instructions. What do you like off the field in the dressing room? Okay, are you a quiet member? Are you vocal? Are you a prankster? What direction are you?
I would say somewhere in the middle. I'm not the most vocal one. I can be quiet as well, but I love to joke around, yes. Like, do some pranks.
Yeah. So you're a bit of a prankster.
Yeah, show some funny videos. I love that. Yeah.
The lads that are at the club, they're down for all that. So did you have an initiation when you signed? Did you have to sing a song or anything?
No, luckily not. No.
No.
They didn't do anything.
Right, well, the lads are going to hear the podcast. This is going straight to Liam Cooper once again, and you'll have to do it. I find it fascinating that you boys don't have to do initiations anymore when you sign. I used to be so nervous signing for a new club, not thinking about like how do you impress and start. I was thinking, what song am I going to sing?
What was your go-to, Bridgie?
Mine was the Red Hot Chili Peppers Under the Bridge.
Ooh.
Just a nice little slow start. Sometimes I feel like I don't have a partner.
Yeah, that's a tricky...
And then you bring them in. And I don't ever want to feel like I did that day. Take me to the place I love.
Wow.
The lads used to hate the slow bit, but when you drop the chorus, man, that's a good one.
Extraordinary.
So I got that down pat. That comes with experience of 36 different football clubs in 20-year career. I can't believe I did that.
Neither can I. You got away with that one, Joel. You've talked about coming into the club and you're liking a bit of a joke and stuff. It certainly feels like there is a real harmony in the changing room at the minute. Is everyone just on the same page right now? Are you all just enjoying each other's company?
Yes, of course. Of course. I think at the end of the day, everyone wants to play, and I think it should be that way. But yes, it's not like guys are blaming each other for not playing or anything. It's more that everyone tries to help the team to win as much games as we can, because that's at the end of the day our only goal is to go up again.
You must be excited at the prospect of Premier League football. Obviously, we're not gonna jinx it too much, but that must be, obviously, everyone we've had on the show, you know, no one's beating around the bush except the boss, really. Everyone's saying, no, we're here to get promoted. That's what we're trying to do. I'm assuming you're in the same mindset. That must be an incredible carrot being dangled in front of everyone, the prospect of Premier League football for yourself.
Yes, definitely. And I think the boss is he's trying to put the pressure as much off as he can.
Yeah.
Whereas we put the pressure on ourselves, because that's just the carrot we see in front of us, and that's where we want to go to.
There's no bigger incentive than the Premier League, let me tell you that. And then when you're in the Premier League, then you've got to go for the incentive of the Champions League, and then it never stops. You've always got to set the targets and the goals. So it's been absolutely tremendous chatting to you, to get to know from one striker to another. Absolutely lovely. I'm delighted you're at Leeds United. You've settled in. You're scoring goals. And I wish you all the best for this season. And hopefully we'll be chatting again next season on the podcast when we're in the Premier League with you once again.
Definitely. Thank you very much for having me as well.
The pleasure was all ours. Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Joel Pirou. Thank you.
Thank you.